Welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast and also the ThunderTech podcast known as Thundercast. I told you all that we were going to be doing this. So I'm sitting in a room in an undisclosed location in downtown Cleveland, Ohio, with some people from ThunderTech. I can pronounce all your names. I practiced, but let's go around the room.
Yeah, I'm Eric Krylo. I'm an account manager here at ThunderTech, also the co-host of ThunderCast.
Hey, I'm Craig Israel, creative director at ThunderTech, and I am the other co-host of ThunderCast.
And I'm Jason Therian, president of ThunderTech. Glad you guys let me in the room.
All right, so who's going to take the first question? What is ThunderTech? Because it's a cool name, but it doesn't necessarily tell everybody exactly what the company is.
I'll take that. So ThunderTech is an integrated marketing agency located near downtown Cleveland. We have a host of services that we bring to our clients, but I don't think we want to turn this into a commercial for our services. But anything you ever wanted to know can be found at thundertech.com.
And it's the group of people who, if you're going to talk about Super Bowl ads, well qualified to do so. And that's what we're talking about today. By the way, waiting for those listening to the Thundercast, Waiting for Next Year is the very best independently owned Cleveland sports website in existence. If you narrow your category down enough, you can use all the superlatives you want, right, guys?
Beautiful. Yes.
That's spoken like a marketer.
Yes. Yeah, so you must be in marketing.
So we're going to talk about Super Bowl ads, kind of the different strategies, the different things. 2016. I was going to say it's shaping up to be an interesting year, but I guess every year is shaping up to be an interesting year. But let's talk generally speaking. Because we've seen different kinds of companies advertise for the Super Bowl. We've seen different kinds of strategies, ones that worked, ones that haven't worked. But the one thing that always occurs to me is this like murky idea of branding versus advertising. So how would you categorize from a high level, you know, the different goals or things that people are trying to accomplish with Super Bowl ads?
Sure. I think I'll take this one to kick it off, if you guys don't mind. In my mind, I think the landscape has changed. Even in the last couple years, what used to be more of a branding exercise and more of a customer acquisition exercise with ads. So, hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. It's now turned more into engagement. So we already know who Doritos is, but how can Doritos do something differently this year in order to engage an audience and get them to talk about that, or get them to talk about what they saw? So we're seeing less about Doritos being so delicious that it'll make your mouth water, and more about seeing pigs fly or all kinds of different things just to get the conversation going. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing where some of these other brands go in terms of that engagement. Obviously, from one year to the next, you're going to see car commercials, you're going to see the apartments.com commercials, but really what are these advertisers going to do this year in order to engage their audience?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the old-fashioned idea of awareness being enough that you make the consumer aware of your product so that the next time they're in the grocery store or wherever they are, wherever your product is, that they see it and they connect those good feelings that they got from your advertisements and turn it into a purchase. I think that concept is pretty much over with, right? It might have worked when you could select from two or three different brands, but now when you go to any supermarket and you're going to have 10 or 20 different brands of products, awareness isn't enough. Like Eric said, I think you need to have some sort of actionable thing that either, if it doesn't make me take action right then and there, that really motivates me into a purchase when I'm in the store.
So the other thing about it is that like it seems to be kind of redefining the goal, because ROI, you know, unless you're doing a coupon code for something, you can't directly measure ROI, or it trails so much later, you know, in terms of we did this advertisement with the Super Bowl, but over the next three quarters, you can't tie back all the success. It's marketing strategy is like this all-encompassing thing. So who are the best brands to like use that as the icing on the cake or a key component as to a marketing strategy? Because we've seen a lot of the failures, you know, people who notoriously go out of business having wasted millions on an advertisement.
Pets.com?
What? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The sock puppet. I miss that guy. Yeah, this is, I think going back quick second, this is one of those last bastions of advertising where it's a single bullet point on a resume, right? So every chief marketing officer and every creative director, they want to be a part of this. So I think there's plenty of brands that get into Super Bowl advertising and this kind of high profile advertising, you know, is just something they've wanted to do. And you know, you can see it every year. It's like, why is that brand here? You know, why are they talking to this mass audience? But it's interesting. I think it is getting better. But I love the ones that take a more integrated approach. Of course, that's the agency side of me coming out. But give me a reason to engage, like Eric said, whether it's pregame or post-commercial. Do I go to a site? Is the, you know, what's the upside in it? And that does help with the trackability over time.
And I want, you know, speaking of things you can track and can't track, it almost goes to sort of this idea of water cooler marketing, which is you want people to talk about it the next day when they're standing around talking to one another. And going back to the Doritos example, if you and I are at the water cooler, I'm pretty sure people still have water coolers, right?
We do not have water coolers.
Proverbial water coolers.
Or, I'm sorry, Brita pitchers. Oh, that's pretty much the same thing.
Sure. I have seen a kegerator here, by the way.
Yes. Two taps, three sides. You can just stand around it.
But I think that you know, when that's the success that they're looking for. So it's like, you know, are people talking about this the next day? And is that conversation then leading to Craig's point, that actionable, that folks then take? And how is that then conveyed? Because even if the action is someone else retweeting it or just tweeting something about it, I think that's almost as good as someone going to your website and checking it out.
Well, let's talk about a specific example. One where, because obviously you want that engagement, you want people to talk, you want people to retweet, but you don't want to be memed about or memed about, whatever. So let's talk specifically about Nationwide killing a child last year.
Oh, wow.
Proverbial.
Couple minutes in.
I want to know, like, what do you think the meeting was like the day after that ran, and the backlash and the outcry and all the most famous meme, I believe, was, I would have run Marshawn Lynch up the middle, but I'm dead.
You know, it's...
Well, it's not... First of all, he didn't really die, correct? The child is alive and well?
Right.
Okay. We presume
we don't
actor,
want to speak ill about the death.
Yes, who played the child is alive and well.
Pay the ultimate price.
You know, as marketers, it's always fun to imagine...
He can't work anymore, but...
Right, yeah.
You know, what are those meetings like? Like, how do you come to make what, in hindsight, looks like a really bad decision? Now... As a marketer, you know, we're talking about it a year later, so you can't say that it didn't have impact, and you can't say that it wasn't memorable. And the Super Bowl is a beast unto itself, right? We should acknowledge that advertising on the Super Bowl isn't your run-of-the-mill, everyday advertising. It's an event akin to the Oscars or the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl of advertising. You know, getting your spot in the Super Bowl, like Jason said, it's a high point in your career. So what was that meeting like? I think they thought they had a really somber, impactful commercial that people would be talking about. Now, that was all true, but not the way they had intended it to be talking about. And to be fair, that's a genre of Super Bowl advertising, the somber, very tug at the heartstrings. You know, we've seen it done well, like God Made a Farmer, right? That was equally somber and serious, but it resonated really well with the audience. This one skewed the other way.
Maybe a little bit of a shock factor in that last one.
Which was really too bad, because if you took the time to actually, you know, pay attention to the call to action, which they're pushing back to the web, they had incredible information on there for parents to avoid the death of a child, right? But people were so shocked about, like, what did they just do?
When I remember the moment on Twitter too, like, did they just kill a child?
Yeah.
And everybody was like asking themselves that.
Record stopped. Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, But that's the thing. Like, you spend all this money. I think to Craig's point, it's not just the post meeting; it's the pre meetings. Mm-hmm. And it's not even that. You know, the one of the ads this year, Avocados from Mexico. You know, they're testing.
Sounds like a cover band or something. Yeah.
They're running four ads through testing right now, so they had to produce four variations or separate ads. I mean, the production costs around these things are incredible. So possibly Nationwide even had this go through focus groups, and it still slipped through. So, you know, it's very interesting.
You know, the more I think about it, though, is that maybe one of the reasons that they went in the direction that they've gone all season, which is just Peyton Manning. I mean, you can't get more, you know, you can't get more normal and more everybody liking Peyton Manning, the whole humming through the jingle or whatever.
I wonder Chicken if that's farm, you taste so good.
Right. And I wonder if that was a situation where they looked back on that and said, okay, it's good that folks were talking about us that way, but let's maybe not take ourselves so seriously this year, and let's talk about, you know, chicken parm sandwiches or the ping pong match. Yes, I think he played right. Something.
Look,
like that.
I guarantee you that in the halls of Nationwide, they're like, we are not having that happen again.
And that's really what I just wondered, like, were people like ticked? Were they going, well, you know, silver lining, people are talking about us? Or was anybody?
That never happens the day after. No. That might be three weeks after, but no, there's somebody.
But, you know, the bottom line, was there a army of people canceling their policies because of that commercial? Probably not, right? That the fervor and the heartburn they experienced for that was probably intense but short-lived, and I would imagine had very little effect on their bottom line.
Well, the Super Bowl is still kind of that premier event in advertising for the year. $377 million estimated to be spent on Sunday alone.
Hey, can I jump in? Let me tell you why I love the Super Bowl. Because as a marketer, all year long, when I go to a party and I say, oh, I'm in advertising, people will turn their nose up and they'll be like, ugh, advertising, commercials, I hate them, right? Because commercials are the things that interrupt the show you like. They're the things that interrupt the radio station you're listening to. They're the junk mail you get. They're
the things that kill children, apparently.
The things that kill children, right? The filler in the magazines I read. Everybody hates advertising until the Super Bowl. And then suddenly, everybody loves advertising. Everybody experiences advertising like we do as marketers. Not you, Craig, because you're a sports guy, right?
Right. Yeah.
But as marketers, we love it, right? Because the Super Bowl, in theory, allows the industry to put out the best of the best and really craft these commercials that resonate with people and show what advertising can do when it's really done well. So for that limited 2-week period, right, everybody wants to talk about it ahead of time, and certainly everybody wants to talk about it and have their top 10 lists after the fact. And then it all goes away and people hate advertising again.
See, and this is one of the things I wanted to ask you guys, especially you guys, because you got – so I heard an interview with a football coach. I think it was maybe even Chud, Rob Chudzinski, at some point where he was saying that he can't enjoy just sitting back and watching a football game anymore because he sees it differently. He sees the X's and O's, and he's judging every second of it. Can you actually, like, sit back and enjoy advertising, or is the judgmental side of you – just screaming or making adjustments or jealousy even, saying, man, I wish I'd thought of that?
Yeah, I think I don't think it takes away my ability to enjoy it, but it certainly causes me to look at it with a judgmental lens. And I think that goes for anything from commercial to print ad to billboard to website even. I just find myself looking at it differently. So rather than a potential consumer, I look at it from a marketing perspective. So I don't agree with Chud on much, that's for sure. But I can say that in this particular case, I can certainly understand where he's coming from.
And I think that any insider is looking at something that portrays their industry with a critical eye. Now that said, you're right. I'm analyzing commercials throughout. I'm looking at them, trying to figure out who the target market is. I'm wondering why they spent $5 million on this crappy commercial. But really, some of the best commercials suck me in to a degree that I can set aside all that. I'm thinking of the Coca-Cola commercial from a couple Super Bowls back where they had, I think it was, they sang America the Beautiful in a variety of different languages. It was so simple, so engaging, and so surprisingly brave on Coca-Cola's part, because they had a little, you know, Latin American girl, they had a little Muslim girl, right? That they there was going to be blowback from that commercial the day after. I mean, especially from people who said, "How dare you have foreigners sing the national anthem of America?" But you know, A, it's not the national anthem, and B, right? Try not to be so racist. But commercials like that, that really are simple and engaging, suck me in, and I can put aside the critical eye for just a moment.
Well, you brought up Coca-Cola. Let's talk about Coca-Cola for a second, because they're doing something this year that we've already heard about, you know, and we'll talk about to leak or not to leak. And I specifically do want to talk about that. But they've let everybody know that they're bringing back Mean Joe Green and the same kid 30 years later from an iconic commercial. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if it, like, resonates, because I think there's a huge portion of the population that barely remembers that. I mean, I feel like I'm in the target demo now. I'm 36 years old. I don't really I remember the references to that, but I don't specifically remember that ad. Most people don't remember Mean Joe Green, so I'm going to be interested to see how it works.
Well, now, full disclosure, I was not alive for this, but I've seen the commercial multiple times.
Jerk.
And and to me, it seems like they're trying to capitalize off of what other brands have done in the past. So bringing back sort of that iconic figure, or bringing back something that a lot of folks have referred to. So in Craig's example, he used Coca-Cola, almost praising them for doing that. In my mind, you've done it before. So they did I think it was We Are the World or something.
Teach the World to Sing.
So I know, yes, exactly. So I mean, I'm pretty sure Don Draper wrote that, at least from what I saw in Mad Men. But anyways, to me, it's more like stop rehashing things and maybe think of something differently. So I'm hoping that whatever this commercial ends up being, because I haven't seen it yet, I'm hoping that it brings more to the table than just, hey, look, the kid grew up, he still looks weird, and Mean Joe Green is still big as four houses put together. Like, we know that. So hopefully they're able to get a little bit more creative.
Yeah, I would say don't hold your breath, right? When you have the amount of money being spent on these commercials, I think it's very tempting to be safe with the messaging you put across. We see it in Hollywood all the time.
For sure.
There are so few really new original movies because they're rehashing variations on a theme that have been successful before, or straight up sequels because they know they can get their money back. You know, Craig, you mentioned ROI up front. I think few of these advertisers really get real ROI in a $5 or $10 million investment for 30 or 60 seconds of airtime.
When we've seen it with a couple of the most iconic brands, some of the most notorious Super Bowl advertisers, I think Budweiser still is the official beer advertiser of the Super Bowl. Like, nobody else can get in. But they're fighting a losing battle in terms of being the macro brew. And they're buying up microbrews and all this other stuff. But if you isolate Budweiser and Bud Light, they're fighting a losing battle of market share with that. And the same with Coca-Cola. You know, Coca-Cola as a company is doing fine from everything I read, but their core Coca-Cola Classic is not going to grow. They can't grow that. They have to grow with Dasani and all these other side brands. So ROI has become increasingly difficult as the bigger the companies get and the bigger the conglomerates get.
Well, going back to Craig's earlier point about having to be safe because of the mass mm-hmm. audience, right? I think that's where the difference in advertising during the season versus the Super Bowl comes in. It's still a football game.
Right.
It's just pulling such a wider, deeper audience than, you know, kind of stereotypical demos that, you know, are going to skew towards diehard sports fans. That's not the Super Bowl, right? So you have to pick, I think, topics and themes that are a bit more global, and that's really difficult to appeal to everybody in a room that may be watching the Super Bowl together.
This is why everybody hates the Super Bowl halftime show, too. It doesn't matter who they pick.
Absolutely.
You know, half the people love Katy Perry. Half the people don't like Madonna. Half the people, well, pretty much everybody claims they don't like Coldplay, but they sell millions of albums.
I don't know who bought them. No, I've never heard of them.
Guilty. I'm one of the ones who defends Coldplay a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. You won't get a shot from me. Yeah. But I think from a mass perspective, you mentioned those kind of very mature, huge brands in, you know, Anheuser-Busch and Bev and, you know, Coca-Cola. that should work for them, right? Yes, they are taking their shots, especially with their core products, but they can reach the masses. And I think, you know, Coke's done a relatively good job over the years. Anheuser, I think they've put out top-notch creative. I think, you know, they are.
Well, everybody knows the Frogs and the Clydesdales, yeah. And.
Well, and this one, this year I'm really looking forward to the new tagline on the Bud Light one around "Raise One to Right Now." Right, so they've kind of been skewing in the last couple of years towards that younger demo, and that raise one to right now sounds like an excuse to drink, right? So cool.
I didn't know that we were as Americans we were running out of those.
Well,
it's in the Constitution.
It's very really deep inside right. There, but you know something like that might help them. But it's what you do after Super Bowl too. Like, does it have legs to it or not?
Well, and let's talk about that because that was, you know. I called it to leak or not to leak, but I know a lot of the Super Bowl commercial advertising purists absolutely despise that these things aren't a surprise anymore. They can look them up on YouTube a week before the commercial. We talked about the massive production costs and the massive planning that goes into all these things. And so if you're going to put all this effort in and you want the longest amount of burn, You're gonna. It's like Black Friday, unleashing itself in October now. Right. Like, does it just depend? Is there a definitive strategy? Do you hate when they leak early, does it just depend?
I think it depends on what that brand has in mind for themselves. So I think if they truly want it to be a surprise, they're going to try and put a lid on that as much as possible. But
right.
Unlike a tweet from Kanye West. Leaked Super Bowl ads you have to find, whereas you know the aforementioned tweets you're going to just run across. Someone's going to retweet it, or you're going to see it in on CNN. You're going to see it somewhere. But I think with Super Bowl ads, the leaked ones, you almost have to go out and search for those, mm-hmm. or you're able to just kind of skip those over as you're going down your Twitter timeline. So I think the brands that want to keep it a secret do. But what I haven't seen, and what I'm curious if anyone's going to end up doing is. Are they ever going to start incorporating those leaks into a strategy? So do they leak a commercial that isn't really the commercial, or maybe it's the intro to the commercial, and then ultimately when the Super Bowl is on, it's something different. So if that doesn't, and that's free marketing for those of you guys listening out there, but if no one's doing that yet, I certainly think that could be sort of that next step is the more often, or you know, from year to year to year, if they continue to be leaked and leaked sooner, will brands start to see that and then try and piggyback off that strategy to make it more impactful when it's actually seen live?
And even the term leaked it's a misnomer, right? That
sure.
Most of these companies, it's not like some disgruntled employee posted this to YouTube without their knowledge. It's part of their overall strategy.
How dare you tear down the wall and tell everybody what's behind
it. A little peek behind the curtain. But I'm interested in, like, look at Taco Bell this year. They have announced that they're going to announce some sort of new product during the Super Bowl. I don't know what that could be. They have like four ingredients that everything they sell is made out of. So it'll be some unique combination of, you know, meat, cheese, bread, and
lactose. I was going to say, I bet it's got cheese.
Good chance, I hope. Well, I flip-flopped on this topic. A couple of years ago, I thought it ruined it. Why would how dare these folks, you know, go and give away.
You're such a purist.
Absolutely. And now I think you're spending so much money, you've got to do what Eric and Craig were talking about. I mean, and it's across mediums now, the promotion. So there's PR blitzes, there's, you know, crowdsourcing of some of these ideas and concepts, whole social blitz. There's even, if you just Google Super Bowl commercials, these brands are buying up pay-per-click ads to just get you to watch. You know, prior to the commercial, they got to give this investment more legs.
And speaking of that, that brings me to the next topic. This is one that I'll go on record. I actually do hate it. It drives me crazy. The fake band commercial. Like every year, PETA does a commercial that they pretend like, hey, this has been banned. No, it was all you designed it never to run. Same with, I think GoDaddy is probably guilty of this.
Yes.
And I get it. I understand it. I still hate it, even though I could see right through it. Where do you guys come out on that?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, if we're talking about it, it's working in the sense that it gets the conversation going and it does get folks engaged. Now, what would be interesting to see, circling back around from a point Craig made much, much earlier, are they, when he mentioned canceling policies with Nationwide, is it so impactful and are people so incensed by that, do they ultimately, not take that next step? Do they ultimately say, next time they see an actual real life ad from PETA, right, do they take it as seriously? And I think until we see sort of that direct connection, I think I'm okay with it.
I don't like where this is going. Go ahead, Craig.
Well, maybe I'm jaded as a marketer, but buyer beware, right? Don't believe everything you read on the internet.
What?
Is that why people aren't inviting you to these parties, Craig, until Super Bowl time?
I suspect.
So you guys are proponents of clickbait headlines too, aren't you? Because they work.
Well,
just wait until what they do, what you see next.
That I am not a fan of.
Oh, so there is some purity left.
He's in the creative department. He's not in the communications department.
No, right. Yeah, I'm not the money guy.
Yeah.
Last but not least, and this is a subversive one that I wanted to talk about, especially because it's in our own backyard. Progressive is doing a non-ad, where they create a bingo card where Flo is the middle thing, and they say, hey, it's the Super Bowl. You guys don't want to think about insurance, but while you're watching the commercials, go ahead and fill out a bingo card, and you can win a big prize. And this one I do think is kind of like genius, just because by not doing – it's the anti-ad, and they're marrying themselves to every other ad.
Well, this we just talked about last week on our podcast about Geico. Doing something very similar to get around DVRs, So of a 30-second ad, they were taping 15 seconds and then giving you your 15 seconds back, they were saying.
Oh.
So okay. I think Progressive can get away with this because Flo is such an established and powerful mascot for them right now, right? That somebody couldn't – I don't think a new advertiser, new to the Super Bowl advertiser this year could get away with something like that. But – just by the fact that Flo, people love her, that Progressive still keeps doing really smart and fun advertising with her. By all means, she should have burned out by now. People should be tired. She should be the Aaron Esurance of the modern age. But
she should be Dude, You Get Adele.
Yeah, right. But they're being smart with her, right? And it's still working. So I agree with you. I think it's a really cool approach. I'll play along, sure.
And you want to talk about ROI when you're not spending $4.8 million on it. It really helps.
Well, Esurance did this last year too, right? That they had the first commercial spot after the Super Bowl with Jim from The Office, right? And they paid significantly less, but they had a really engaging mechanism to get people to pay attention. And they were very self-referential, saying, we bought the first spot afterwards and we're saving money and we're going to pass along that savings to you. Really smart buys and smart creative like that, I think, really pay off for a company.
And they tied that to social.
Yeah.
So they gave the difference away via social. So they created all this buzz online. And the person who won didn't even know what she was retweeting. She just saw everyone else retweeting it. And here she won like $1 million.
Crazy.
Yeah, I just, as far as Progressive goes, they can do whatever they want. Just stop putting LeBron in drag.
Oh,
he's one of the less handsome females I think I've ever seen.
Well, and maybe that was kind of the point. You think? Do you think they were trying to attract you with sex appeal?
I don't know. It's rough.
We had to look at it.
You might not be the target market.
We see LeBron crying enough on a nightly basis. I don't need to see him in drag also.
I'm not so sure that this is going to make you popular with the waiting for next year portion of this audience.
I do love LeBron, though, for what it's worth. I just prefer him not in drag.
All right. Fair enough. Before we go, because I think we've probably covered the advertising portion pretty well, we should talk a tiny bit of actual football. So do we have any predictions? The Panthers, I'll set the scene. As of this taping, the Panthers, I believe, are still 6-point favorites. I think, everybody would say that they have an advantage at quarterback. I would say people would say the Broncos have a slight advantage from the defensive side of the ball. Do you have any takes on how the game itself is actually going to go?
Me personally, I would agree with a lot of what you're saying. And I think the narrative that we're being fed right now, we talked a little bit about this off air, but feel like we're being fed the quarterback versus quarterback. So it's new versus young. It's more of the fun aspect versus sort of the curmudgeon-y, you know, stand the in film room, all of that stuff. I think that's the sort of line we're getting fed, but it seems to me like it's
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm going to, because I've talked about this on the Waiting for Next Year podcast. If you just look at last year's Super Bowl, where Russell Wilson became the GOAT and Tom Brady received a crown while he was on the sidelines, you know, and so this quarterback versus quarterback thing is always false, and we buy it. We seem to like let them feed it to us every single year. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine, and I agree with you, and I think it is easy because those are the two of the most high profile, and I think especially in the day and age we live in now, you know, because of Cam being an African American, I think that adds to that conversation. You know, race is always a hot button topic, and it's always something, you know, that has a lot of legs. But to me, it seems far more about Cam Newton's offense versus Denver's defense. And even if you want to drill it down further, I feel like it's Cam Newton versus the secondary. If Denver plays the way that they played against New England, both from a blitzing standpoint and also from just an overall defensive strategy, I think they have a chance. Now, if Cam starts throwing and that's not working, I think Wade needs to then drop seven back and say to himself, okay, let's make Cam throw the ball or let's make him beat us with his legs.
Let's make Ted Ginn beat Aqib Talib.
Right.
You know.
Now, speaking of your podcast listeners, I'm sure they're all Ted Ginn Central, right? He's a Ohio guy.
Ohio State.
Cleveland guy,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But if I had to put a number to it, And I hate to do it because I'd love to see Peyton go out a winner. I really would. And I think that this is his last go around. But I think Carolina's going to pull it off. And I think that they're going to pull it off. I'm going to say 31. Let's go 31-17, Carolina.
Any other football predictions?
Wow. You guys haven't mentioned the Browns.
Yeah, no. Why would we?
We're still waiting for next year.
So apparently I haven't done a good enough job at home. My wife was in the supermarket with my 5-year-old son, uh-huh. And he saw the Super Bowl. You know, advertising. I guess I've trained him well enough on that. And he told my wife he couldn't wait to watch the Browns this Sunday. And she told him, and he started crying in the supermarket.
Well, my
welcome
son
to
is
my every Sunday.
Welcome to Cleveland, son.
My son is also 5, and what he knows more than anything else, more than anything Browns related, is that the Steelers are the worst. So
you've raised him well.
That's all. You got it. The small victories when they're that young.
Age appropriate. Oh, look, don't look at me. Full disclosure, I am not a sports ball guy, so I will be watching the Super Bowl solely for the commercials.
Yeah, you know, this is the game with the – it's not a round ball. It's oblong, oddly shaped. Okay.
There's no hoops in this.
That's right.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to introduce myself to the Thundercast audience. I'm happy to introduce you guys to the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast audience. Tell everybody out there. Don't tell me. Tell everybody out there where they can go to find Thundercast. Obviously, you can search Thundercast on iTunes, but there's a URL as well.
Yep, you can find us iTunes, Stitcher, like you said, but if you want to go directly to the source, thundertech.com/podcast.
And what will they get when they listen to the podcast?
Oh, what won't they get is
I
the question.
I know, right?
So that page has all the podcasts that we've done to date. You can go back and hear Eric and I and a variety of other co-hosts wax poetic on marketing on a variety of topics.
Current events and whatnot.
Oh, especially the whatnot, yes.
Yeah, well, and specifically, there was an episode where you talked about the Playboy decision to go non-nude,
oh,
I believe.
So a listener.
Titillating.
Yes.
It was.
And it's NSFW, so, you know, try not to listen to it at work.
Right. Yes.
Don't search for
that one at work.
Occasionally use a bad word.
So do we.
Unfortunately, the visuals for that podcast didn't come through to the audience, but I guess that's what happens.
Yeah. All right, so thanks for listening, everybody. You know what to do. Share it with your friends. Rate it on iTunes. Do all those things that help us when you get stuff for free from us. So until next time, thank you for listening to the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast and also the Thundercast.
Free? We're not getting paid for this?
What?